The headlines: Israel is committing the world's most documented genocide in history as the death toll from the regime's relentless onslaught on Gaza tops 23,000, mostly women and children. Palestinians protest in Ramallah to protest the top U.S. diplomat's visit to the occupied West Bank and condemn the American-Israeli genocide in Gaza. Iran hosts two major international parliamentary events to discuss ways to stop Israel's genocidal war on Gaza. Hello and welcome, everybody. More than 3 months into the Israeli genocide in Gaza, the regime continues with its carpet bombing campaign across the besieged territory. Nearly 60 Palestinians have been killed in the past 24 hours. Israel has bombed different areas of Gaza, including the southern city of Khan Yunis, that hosts thousands of displaced Palestinians. Several were injured at a UN-run school when Israeli drones opened live fire on Palestinians taking shelter there. The city's Nasser Hospital and its vicinity have also come under heavy Israeli fire. To the central Gaza, Israeli warplanes shelled civilian areas near Al-Maghazi and Nusayrat refugee camps in the north. Residential areas in Deir al-Balah and Jabalia were pounded as well. The overall death toll from the U.S. Israeli genocide in Gaza has now reached 23,210, mostly women and children. A new emerged video has gone viral on social media showing Israeli snipers targeting civilians in Gaza. Israeli snipers targeted a group of mostly women and children who were passing through a Gaza street carrying white flags as a token of peace. They gunned down one Palestinian woman carrying a child and waving a white flag. Israel is already facing a genocide case at the International Court of Justice after South Africa filed a lawsuit against the regime. Pretoria's initiative has been welcomed by several countries. It's more than 3 months into Israel's genocidal war on Gaza, which has not only caused the loss of thousands of innocent lives, but has also inflicted severe mental and physical harm upon Palestinians. Israel has also intensified its brutalities in the West Bank. In the latest attack, the regime's forces deliberately opened fire on three Palestinians in the occupied territory. Surveillance camera footage from the West Bank village of Beit Rima showed Israeli snipers opening fire on three men. That happened despite the fact that the men posed no threat. One of them died, while the other two sustained injuries. Israeli forces shot one of the wounded a second time as he tried to get up and flee. Here's an interview with the survivors of the latest Israeli aggression. Let's take a listen.
My friends and I were standing at the village roundabout when we heard someone say that there was the Israeli army and soldiers walking around. We stood there not knowing what to do and having nothing in our hands. Suddenly there was a sniper soldier who started shooting at my brother, injuring him. I ran toward him to help, but the soldiers started shooting at me, and there was a third person who tried to help, but who was killed at the same time the soldier was sniping.
I was injured in my left leg and fell to the ground. After that, I tried to stand up, but then the Israeli soldiers shot at my other leg. I was subsequently transported to the hospital.
Palestinians have staged a protest in the West Bank against a visit of U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken to the occupied territories. A protest took place in the city of Ramallah despite heavy presence by Israeli police. The protesters held up signs reading "Stop the Genocide" and "Free Palestine." The demonstration took place as Blinken met with Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas in Ramallah. The top U.S. diplomat earlier met with Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and the Minister of Military Affairs. This is the fourth visit by Blinken to the occupied territory since Israel waged its war on Gaza 3 months ago. The U.S. is facing growing criticism over its support for the regime by providing arms and giving diplomatic support at the United Nations. Our correspondent Mona Kandil is joining us now from Ramallah to bring us up to speed on the recent demonstrations against the visit of U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken to the occupied West Bank. Mona?
It's clear that the visit of U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken to the occupied territories and meeting with Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas. The main aim is to express support for Israel. And this is what happened when he arrived into Israel, the occupied territories, in 1948. He expressed his fully supporting Israel, and he did not call for a ceasefire or ending the Israeli genocidal war on the Gaza Strip, because at the end of the day, it's an American-Israeli genocidal war on the Gaza Strip. Palestinians here, when they knew that Blinken was supposed to meet Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas, they protested in the city of Ramallah. The visit of Blinken was very short. He came to Ramallah, where President Abbas was expected, following his meeting with Blinken, to travel to Jordan, to Al-Aqaba, specifically for a summit with the Jordanian, the King of Jordan, as well as the Egyptian president in Al-Aqaba. According to what we have received from the Palestinian presidential office, the President Mahmoud Abbas discussed the latest, development in the Gaza Strip, and President Abbas had warned during his meeting with Blinken from the dangers of what the Israeli occupation regime is doing in both in the Gaza Strip and the occupied West Bank. He said that all the Israeli measures are meant to force Palestinians out, not only from the Gaza Strip, but also from the occupied West Bank. At the end of the day, the Palestinians were hoping that at least the Palestinian Authority and President Mahmoud Abbas was not going to receive Blinken, especially here in Ramallah, at the time when the Israeli occupation regime and the Israeli military are still bombarding the Gaza Strip, killing more Palestinians, innocent people, their women, children, and elderly. At the same time, the Israeli forces are raiding Palestinian areas, ignoring all the previous agreements, let's say, that these territories should be part of the future Palestinian state and that they should be under the control of the Palestinian Authority.
Thanks a lot, Mona Kandil, joining us from Ramallah. Elsewhere, Palestinian fighters are putting stiff resistance against Israeli forces in the Gaza Strip, inflicting more losses on invading troops. The Al-Qassam Brigades, a military wing of the Hamas resistance movement, has captured a reconnaissance drone flying over the city of Beit Lahia in northern Gaza. Also, Israeli occupation forces on Tuesday confirmed the death of 11 more troopers in the battles with Palestinian fighters. The regime has so far confirmed the loss of around 190 soldiers since the onset of its ground invasion of Gaza. However, Israeli media accused the regime's army of undercounting the number of casualties to cover up its losses against the Palestinian resistance. Iran has lambasted the United States for its unquestionable support for the Israeli regime's crimes. In a statement, Iranian ambassador and permanent representative to the UN, Amir Saeedi Ravani, referred to Washington's abuse of its veto power at the world body and its opposition to the establishment of a ceasefire in Gaza. He noted the United States' obstruction of the duties of the UN Security Council is in conflict with international calls for an end to the Israeli bloodshed. He said Washington's veto has given Israel complete freedom to continue its relentless and indiscriminate bombardment of civilian infrastructure in Gaza. He reiterated that more innocent lives will be lost if a ceasefire does not take hold in Gaza. Iran's parliament speaker Mohammad Baqir Ghalibaf says what's happening in Gaza is a clear example of U.S. hypocrisy.
What is seeing today in Palestine is a clear example of the hypocritical policy of the United States and its Western cronies in supporting the Israeli aggression, bloodshed, and defending tyrannical moves and denying historical facts in Palestine.
Ghalibaf was addressing a meeting of the Parliamentary Committee of the Organization of Islamic Cooperation on Palestine in Tehran. He called on Israel supporters to stop backing the regime. That's because, he warned, The ongoing war could result in consequences which are not in favor of anyone. Aliwaf also said that Iran supports the Palestinians' right to self-determination and self-defense. He added the October 7th Al-Aqsa flood operation was the Palestinians' natural response to decades of Israeli aggression and crimes. The Algerian speaker, who also chairs the Parliamentary Union of OIC member states, addressed the meeting. He said Israel is the prime responsible party for the Gaza crisis.
Israel is primarily responsible for the pain and suffering of the Palestinian people, and international organizations should discharge their responsibilities and their moral principles with regards to Palestinian people's rights and the establishment of a Palestinian state with Al-Quds as its capital.
The Algerian speaker called for unconditional and unrestricted entry of humanitarian aid into Gaza. He also categorically rejected the Israeli policy of forcing Palestinians out of their land, stressing those Palestinian territories should be entirely under their own rule. Other participants also spoke out against the Israeli regime's genocide in Gaza. Some called for boycotting the regime in an effort to bring an immediate end to the war. Others highlighted the crimes against civilians, especially children. The Israeli regime's military has launched fresh attack on southern Lebanon. The aerial attack left two Lebanese, including a member of the Hezbollah resistance movement, dead. Our correspondent Mariam Saleh is joining us now from the Lebanese capital, Beirut, with more details on the recent Israeli aggression in south Lebanon. Mariam?
Well, today Israeli shelling was very evident in the towns of Khiam and Naqoura, especially very heavy shelling, actually, in Naqoura specifically, which is closer to the coast. But with the continuous shelling, I think the most important, most dangerous development that occurred just yesterday was that the Lebanese army, along with the UNIFIL, detected and found that the Israelis were, in addition to shelling the trees and the orchards and the agricultural sectors and areas in South Lebanon, especially the area which is right in Al-Mashab and Aitashab, that was where they found pipes where the Israelis were actually using in order to put in more gasoline and gas in order to try to cause more fires in those areas. Since the beginning, of course, of the confrontation, the Israelis have burned more than 40,000 olive trees in addition to other agricultural lands. Despite all of this, you have the firefighters, the Lebanese army also, with its capabilities, they have always tried to extinguish the fires, tried to save as many trees as they can. But now the Israelis, since they have found that with the fact that we have all these attempts to stop the fires, they're attempting to cause more flames that would probably not be extinguishable. And so this is what we're looking at, a most very dangerous development here in South Lebanon. Lebanon's government has said that it will be also sending a complaint to the United Nations on that issue specifically, and also in general about the 1701 violations by the Israeli regime. The Israeli regime, of course, in addition to the continuous shelling, just yesterday they launched a drone attack against on one of the cars that was in the area of Khirbet Sinem. Khirbet Sinem is somewhere very behind and far away from the border. It's not an area which is subject to the confrontation. You don't see usually any Israeli shelling there. And that was in the exact village and town where there was a funeral procession for Hezbollah commander Wissam al-Tawil. And so many have thought that perhaps the Israelis had begun extending and enlarging the scale and the scope of their war, but it seems that they targeted that car specifically. We know that there was a member of Hezbollah who was in that car as well. We also saw that there was shelling against several houses, one house in the town of Farshuba as well, which was destroyed, and the owner was also killed and martyred as a result of this shelling. Now, Hezbollah yesterday launched some 12 operations, very significant operations, but the most important was the fact that they retaliated, as they said, even an initial retaliation also, in continuation of the retaliation for the assassination of Hamas leader Sheikh Salah al-Aruri, in addition to retaliation to the assassination of the Hezbollah commander Wissam al-Tawil. And it seems that even that was also initial. They, of course, they targeted the central command of in the area of Safa, which is the central command of the Israeli military in all of the north. And so that this is why this is considered very significant. But it seems that the Israelis have begun, we can say, a new chapter of confrontations, which is that of assassinations. Hezbollah will definitely be retaliating if these assassinations continue. And it seems that Hezbollah has also extended the scope of their database when it comes to what they are going to be targeting. They're not going to be limiting their operations on the border barracks or those just behind them. We're going further off now towards Safad, and you never know if Hezbollah decides to launch an operation which is further off in order to retaliate for the assassination of especially of Salah al-Aruri, which was conducted in Beirut. This is something that is yet to be seen, since Hezbollah has not said that they have closed the case. And so if it's not closed, then therefore Hezbollah will definitely still be launching very qualitative and significant operations against the Israeli regime.
Thanks a lot. Maryam Saleh joining us from the Lebanese capital, Beirut. Moving on, more countries hail South Africa for filing a lawsuit against Israel at the International Court of Justice over the regime's genocidal war on the besieged Gaza Strip. Belgium is the first European nation that has backed South Africa's petition against Israel. At the top UN court, Belgium's Deputy Prime Minister Petra de Sutter said her country cannot remain silent in the face of genocide in Gaza. In a message posted on X, he called on the Belgian government to take its own action at the ICJ. Previously, the Maldives, Namibia, Pakistan, Turkey, Bolivia, Jordan, and Malaysia also voiced their support for the case. Meanwhile, over 900 popular movement unions, political parties, and other civil organizations signed an open letter calling on world states to support the genocide case. South Africa filed the lawsuit against Israel at the end of December. The ICJ will hold its first hearing to consider provisional measures on Thursday. An international advocacy group for children has described 2023 as the year of genocide for children in Palestine, where at least 8,000 kids were killed by Israeli forces in the Gaza Strip. Defense for Children International has described as unprecedented the number of kids killed by Israel in Gaza. It says the number is expected to rise significantly due to the nonstop Israeli bombardment of civilian infrastructure and the high number of children who are still unaccounted for. According to the group, in the occupied West Bank, at least 121 Palestinian children were killed in attacks by Israeli forces last year. Meanwhile, the Palestinian Ministry of Education has said that the number of slaughtered Palestinian students has surpassed 4,200. The ministry added 84 students have been killed and hundreds more injured in the West Bank since the onset of the Israeli genocide on October the 7th. That's it with the world news for now. Bye, everybody.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish. We'll be right back.
32.
2 months.
Yani?
32. Bazaar.
Whether man-made or not, food can have fascinating backstories. Products usually take a long journey before they end up on the dining table. Nevertheless, the food industry follows several golden rules that have helped it steadily grow over time. The most important of these is continuous product innovation and improved production processes to reduce costs and wastage. Others involve packaging and product accessibility, but probably the king of all rules is the taste that drives the food industry.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Bazaar, the weekly programme that analyses markets, profits, industries and all sorts of things that connect us nationally and internationally. This week we will be exploring the food industry and its related agricultural markets. We wanted to see how the food sector has expanded over the years and what companies are doing to increase their profits. So let's check out the Tasty Grub.
To become more familiar with how much work goes into food production, we visited Golha Food Industries. It was established nearly a century ago, and its products are now a household name. It produces hundreds of items in 7 categories, such as dried legumes and fruit, spices and canned products. It also takes great pride in its healthy product line, including gluten-free flour products. This producer has devoted a lot of attention to the packaging of its products. Due to its diverse product list, it purchases such materials as cans, plastic, and cardboard to design the appropriate type of storage systems for distribution. The company has a massive daily output due to its expansive production facilities. Most of the work is done by automated machines, but the fine details are handled by experienced staff. All production processes start when raw material enters the company. These materials are first tested for quality before hitting the production floors, most of which are domestically supplied. After being tested, the material is sent to various closed circuit machines for processing. Then it is time for sorting and more quality control tests before packaging.
Food production is a very sensitive process requiring many checks and controls that guarantee the final product is safe for consumption. And production machines play an essential role as they reduce errors and maintain constant output results. Plus, many of these machines have been domestically engineered, whereas they were previously imported at high prices.
This company has a highly equipped quality control and research and development lab. It's where many new products are created and food safety standards are controlled. Moreover, the staff in this department implement food sciences to make innovative products. It might be interesting to know that this department also has some of the best food tasters. This producer has been awarded Best Research and Development Department in Food Production for many consecutive years. Among its many achievements, it has also been awarded the certificate of favored brand by customers. This wouldn't be possible without adhering to strict national and international food safety and production management standards. Following such standards has helped it maintain its export share in the global food market. With years of experience, this company has grown such that it provides thousands of employment opportunities, both directly and indirectly. It also has thousands of agencies and stores all over the country. Plus, its products can also be purchased online. As part of its future vision, this company is looking to increase its market share both domestically and abroad. It also has long-term plans to increase production and improve the production process for efficiency. The Iranian food industry has taken giant strides away from its traditional production methods. Industry participants say using food sciences and new technologies has helped the food industry grow faster than before. Never more than now has food been more accessible. In fact, it only requires a touch of a few buttons to receive it at home. Therefore, food packaging is a critical part of the production. Over the last decade, there has been a great emphasis on developing packaging for the food industry. This is because Iran indigenized many machines needed to process and produce food items such as deli meats, beverages, pickles, and so much more. Proper packaging also increases shelf life, which is important for consumers. Previously, food items such as spices and dairy products were purchased bulk from customers abroad due to a lack of packaging. While exporting items in bulk has benefits, it's not as profitable as selling prepackaged foodstuff. So, in addition to adding value to raw products such as meat, companies have also designed attractive packaging to contain food in more manageable portions. Such a strategy increases not only product quality, but also food safety, which helps producers meet international export standards. This trend also helps companies with branding and has created job opportunities for designers. As you probably already know, the food industry is heavily dependent on production in the agriculture sector. So it's no surprise that the agriculture sector holds the pulse of national food security and food exports. Plus, it is one of the only sectors that has been barely impacted by the US-imposed sanctions and the global coronavirus outbreak. That was horrible. We looked at some figures from the Ministry of Agriculture to see how this sector is doing. Last year, around 6 million tons of agricultural and foodstuff products were exported. Trade of these products raked in roughly $4 billion. Pistachio, saffron, and confectionery products topped the export charts in value during that period. Other agriculture sectors, such as livestock, poultry, and aquaculture, have also generated millions of dollars in exports. Last year, nearly 450,000 tons of these items were sent to markets in neighboring regions worth $500 million. Agriculture accounts for 8% of the country's gross domestic product. It might be interesting to know that around half of Iran's total non-oil trade comes from this sector. That's all based on data from Iran's Ministry of Agriculture. According to Iran's Customs Administration, the total non-oil trade value rose nearly 40% last year. Over 120 million tons of non-oil products worth $72 billion were traded with other countries in that period. Meanwhile, the government has implemented measures to encourage the development of agriculture. One trend this sector is witnessing is the application of smart technologies for the cultivation and harvest of various products. There has also been a boom in developing greenhouses and green practices to preserve natural resources. The word plastic was initially used to describe pliable and easily shaped objects. However, it only recently became a name for a category of materials called polymers. Such materials are abundant in nature. Take cellulose, for example. It's the material that makes up the cell walls of plants. However, synthetic polymers are a more recent invention of the last 150 years. These come from the plentiful carbon atoms found in fossil fuels. Since then, they have become an integral part of the industry, technology, and even various sciences.
We will explore Iran's plastic and polymer productions. We will also check out some of its downstream markets and their contributions to the national economy. These days, we use more plastic than ever before. It's terrible. So where does this material come from? And what goes into making this stuff? Let's find out.
Our quest for answers led us to a company specializing in making various polymer products. Parsa Polymer Sharif was established some 20 years ago and is a knowledge-based company that was born in the research department of the University of Sharif. As a leading advanced polymer compound manufacturer, it makes various products essential to everyday living. It produces compounds based on commodity thermoplastic resins like PP, PE, and the famous PET, or PET. It also engineers resins like PVC and so much more. This knowledge-based company is a major supplier of raw materials to many industries. Some include original equipment manufacturers in the automotive market and PVC pipe producers in the construction industry. Over the years, this company has helped Iran save millions on products that would otherwise be imported. This firm has three main functions: research and development, innovation center, and production. It also has a brand new line for researching and producing biodegradable polymers for the packaging industry. Most of the raw materials needed for production are domestically purchased. When this stuff enters the company, it is first tested and graded based on its quality. Then, according to its intended use, the raw material is formulated and sent to machines for production.
Machines used in the polymer industry utilizes some of the most advanced machinery for production. The extruder is one of the most commonly used machines. They play a central role in plastic production. Extruder lines are the largest converters of plastics worldwide. Some of these machines can be domestically manufactured while others are still imported.
Its products are all tested in its well-equipped research and development lab. The various granules and resin compounds undergo over a dozen tests while being analyzed for quality here. Also, new product formulas are created in this highly technical research and development department. Through these facilities, the company is expanding its product portfolio. Products made here are produced along the lines of exports. So, national and international quality standards are implemented during the production processes. This means the quality of products found here doesn't just match international standards, they go beyond the quality of competing foreign brands in the international arena. The headquarters of this company is located in Sharif University Advanced Technologies Incubator. Owing to this, it has strong relations and collaborations with the scientific community. It has also been awarded for its contributions to the scientific and industrial sectors over the past years. This knowledge-based company also exports its products. The company has a unique future vision strongly intertwined with sustainable business development. This is partly due to its forward-thinking and social and environmental responsibility outlook.
Now, polymers are the primary materials that build many other products. Plastic items have different polymer formulations depending on their application. The majority of polymers made in Iran are domestically consumed. Some of its biggest customers are in the construction sector. Also, plastic is extensively used in the medical industry and transportation.
Almost everything around us is either made of plastic or has some plastic component. Moreover, plastic has played a central role in the development of the medical industry over the past 60 years. These materials are used to create hemodialysis machines, disposable needles, IV drips, and testing equipment vital to modern medicine. Plastics have also had a considerable impact on developing high-quality prosthetics. The National Medical Device Directorate estimates that Iran's share in the global medical device market will reach well over $7 billion in the next 3 years. PVC materials are also largely used in Iran's construction industry. For example, Iran's Doors and Windows Manufacturers Association estimates the domestic demand for PVC doors and windows is around 35,000 tons annually. This is partly due to the current residential construction boom in the country. The home appliance industry is also another mammoth customer of the polymer industry. Based on figures from the Ministry of Industry, Mining and Trade, Iran has doubled its production in this sector over the last 3 years. In 2021, around 15 million home appliance units were produced, with exports soaring to roughly $140 million. So, polymer production is key in expanding many manufacturing industries, which have raked in large amounts of foreign revenue for the country.
Well, I believe it is that time of the show where I should take a little break and pass the action over to my good friend and colleague out there on the field. Take it away.
Despite all the advancements in technology and the problems it has solved, food security is one it hasn't. In fact, it is becoming more and more of an issue beyond the countries that have always been grappling with it. One solution is to, well, end inflation and the global economic crisis, but that's hardly a solution. There's no end in sight with that. But another way is to use technology to make things more efficient. We wouldn't be needing more land because we're not getting it thanks to desertification of more and more land. We also wouldn't be needing more water because we're also not getting it, also thanks to desertification. We would actually need less of both, if only we could manage our resources better.
Iran has some potential for farming and agriculture, and that's a massive understatement if you've ever heard one. But we could definitely do with some improvements, some innovations in the field, especially with irrigation, because, well, we've been experiencing some drought and some water shortages a little bit more than what climate change would warrant. And that's why we're here to check out a smart greenhouse that believes has the answer, that the shakeup that the industry needs to be a lot more efficient, especially with water, plus some extra goodies. So stay tuned to this episode of The Bazaar to check out what they've been able to come up with.
About that efficiency, greenhouses can help provide that by creating a controlled environment that, while it could be much smaller than a field, it can yield higher quality produce and more produce per acre. Greenhouses can protect the crops and vegetables from extreme weather conditions, pests, or really any other external threat. The parameters that are controlled in a greenhouse are light, ventilation, humidity, and temperature. This would allow the farmers to create the kind of optimal micro-ecosystem that would eventually lead to them growing healthier, tastier, more nutritious, and, you know, better-looking produce.
What you will find in this smart greenhouse are tomatoes, cherry tomatoes, bell pepper, and cucumbers. There are certain types of fruits and vegetables that are preferred to be used in greenhouses, for example, the ones that I just mentioned. And there are certain types of crops that are not optimal for greenhouse use, for example, wheat and rice. So, but that's just some information about greenhouses in general. What makes this particular greenhouse unique and smart is that all of the parameters that need to be kept in check in a greenhouse are all monitored and manipulated remotely through the cloud and Internet of Things, instead of some worker or some farmers coming in and out of the greenhouse to manipulate things manually. That's the smart aspect of it in a nutshell. But to find out more information about the smartness of this greenhouse, let's hear from some of the experts here.
In this greenhouse, we measure all essential parameters for the plants, like temperature, moisture, CO2, ambient light, the water parameters, and the moisture of the roots, using the available sensors and control them with the actuators and the smart control unit. And also remotely control it via Internet of Things. With properly controlling the climate and the irrigation system, We increased the productivity up to 30% and decreased the water consumption by up to 40% comparing other hydroponic greenhouses in our country. And in the next step, we are trying to recycle the drained water of the irrigation system and pass it through some filters and put it back again into the irrigation system in order to further decrease the water consumption. And also, we are developing a robotic harvester, including a mobile-based manipulator, soft gripper, and vision system equipped with artificial intelligent algorithm in order to detect the ripe crops and pick them in the proper time.
1% of the world's water resources are fresh water, and most of it, in fact, 70% of it, is used in agriculture. What we choose to do with that tiny, finite reserve is a responsibility that we need to bear. Greenhouses can control the irrigation of plants. You may have sophisticated plumbing systems in the ground or in the cocoa peats, as you will see, to prevent overwatering, which can promote rots and fungal diseases, and reduce evaporation, saving huge amounts of water in the process. There is even the option to recycle the runoff water and put it back into the system to further save up on water. The great thing about this particular smart greenhouse is that you don't need to be born into a farmer family that has thousands of acres of land to make this a viable option to you. You can own land as small as 100 square meters and it would still be a financially viable option for you, especially since after the initial installation phase and the setup process, you won't be needing much manpower to control the environment.
Interest has been shown in this smart greenhouse by certain countries, especially in Africa, such as Kenya, Niger, and Ethiopia. The idea, and of course the working proof of the idea, really has the potential to shake up the industry. And if it catches on, it can only mean good things for the farmers and the food sector in general. Thank you for staying tuned to another episode of Bazaar.
Many thanks for that wonderful report. Well, that brings us to the end of our show today. I've been Samson Sees. Sees you in the next Bazaar.
Arabi English Radio, a window to peace of mind and spirituality. You can tune in to Arabi English Radio 24 hours a day. We are with you. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Arabi English Radio.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and wherever you are listening to us.
The keys of life.
The world is a very, very big house. Many people living in many rooms. We must open all the doors up. We must unlock them all today. Throw all the keys away.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitan rajim. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Brothers, sisters, dear listeners, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatihi wa barakatuh, and welcome to the program Mafatihul Hayat, Keys of Life. One of the keys of life, and a very important key of life, is dealing with our relatives, because we social creatures, we need them around us. We will need their help sooner or later, be it brothers, cousins, and aunties, or what have you. We will need them. When it comes to nasab, when it comes to this relationship. In the Arabic language, or in the Islamic terminology, and to be more specific, fiqh terminology, and this is where the Arabic is a very rich, beautiful language where other languages fall short, including English. We have, when we look at relatives, as we call them, al-arham, we have two branches of arham, of relatives of next of kin or kin. One is what we call sababi, and one what we call nasabi. The sababi one are the ones who are blood-related relatives or kin, brothers, sisters, my brother's children, and going down, my sister's children and going down, my grandfather and going up, and my grandmother and going up, and those, you know, who are related to blood. We call them sababi. Then we have nasabi, kin. And these are the ones we gather and we get later on in life. And these ones come through marriage. When a man marries a woman and a woman marries a man, the family of each other, they become related, they become kin. They become rahim as well. So if I marry a woman, her father, her mother, her brothers, her sisters, her relatives, they become my relatives. We call them nasabi through nasab. And the same wise, my parents and my family, they become her kin as well. So I hope that makes it very clear when we talk about nasab and sabab. So there's a reason why these ones became relatives. The Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, or even the Quran in this regard, they say these people have haqq, they have right over you. So for example, we read in chapter Al-Furqan in verse 54, Allah says, وَهُوَ الَّذِي خَلَقَ مِنَ الْمَاءِ بَشَرًا. He is the one that created out of water humans. فَجَعَلَهُ نَسَبًا. And he made them, you know, interact and kin with each other. So when families get married and when people get married, families come together. So basically we are all related in a way or another through marriage. وَصِهْرَ وَكَانَ رَبُّكَ قَدِيرًا. Not only through marriage, but also through having in-laws. And Allah says He wishes to do what He wants, or He has the power to do as He wishes. And we see this in the hadith of the Ahl Bayt alayhim as-salam. So the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, he says, Ya Ahl al-Qaraba, or people of relation and close to each other, visit each other, do not oppress each other, gift one another. Tusullu al-Sakhima, for gifting each other, it takes away the hatred from each other. And visiting one another firms this love and compassion towards each other. So this, in al-Qaraba, the Prophet uses the word Qaraba, close, next of kin, or kin, and includes both nasabi and hasabi, whether they are through blood or whether they are through marriage. So the Ahlul Bayt, when they give us the teachings of Islam, they say they are as good as the ones who are from blood. I mean, even to be quite fair, from an Islamic perspective, the ones who come through blood, obviously they have a higher priority over the others in terms of, for example, helping and support and what have you. But does not mean we neglect the other ones. Let us take a short break, and then we will come back.
Ayatollah Javadi Amali, the author of the book Mafatihul Hayat, The Keys of Life. This book, Mafatih, ought to be in two volumes. One volume, the present volume, Mafatihul Janan, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc.
یه جلدش کم داره و اینه که فرون درخت کاری اینجا کم حساب داره دعا هم داره ثواب هم داره
But the book lacks its second volume, which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree.
امام اونطوری که اینو گفته بودم گفته دی اون امامی که گفته اگر روزه بگیری ثواب داره همون امام گفته که اگر درخت بکاری اون ثواب داره.
Imam has mentioned both of these subjects. The very Imam, who has stressed out the reward for praying, has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree. There are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment. When growing wheat, take some in your hand and say these prayers. These are what the very Imam has mentioned. We lack this second volume in Islamic world.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program Keys of Life, Mafatihul Hayat. A question might come to a person's mind. What is the benefit, what is the blessings in keeping and staying connected with kin and relations? And this is a very valid question. And sometimes a lot of people do not connect with their kin, with their relatives, because they don't understand the consequences of such an act. And sometimes they don't even understand the barakah, the blessings and the reward of being connected to next of kin. A hadith from Amir al-Mu'mineen, salamullah alayhi, he says, Ya ayyuhan nas, and beautifully Amir al-Mu'mineen, the master of eloquence, he begins with nas, not mu'mineen, not muslimin, which means whatever follows will apply to every human being on earth. He says, a person cannot survive without his family, be it through nasab or hasab, as we explained. He said, even though he has wealth, because sometimes people think, well, I got money, I don't need nobody. The Imam says, no, you're quite mistaken. You can have a lot of money, but if you get in trouble, your money can't save you. You will have to run to someone. He says, these people will defend you, bi-aydihim, with their hands, meaning like power. They will fight with you. They will stand with you. Wa-al-sinatihim, if they have to stand in court or what have you, they will use a tongue to defend you. So he says, even wealth cannot save you, but they can. And he says, وَهُمْ أَعْظَمُ النَّاسِ حِيطَةٌ مِّن وَرَائِهِ. And they are the one that care about you the most. Your close family, they are the one that care about you the most, and they defend you the most. And they are the ones that feel sorry, and they feel compassion and empathy and sympathy towards him more than anyone else when he falls into a calamity or a problem. Then the Imam alayhi salamullah, he continues until he gets to this point and he says, do not take any other mean, do not replace, do not try to change, do not try to, give them away for the sake of something else. There is nothing that can equal your relatives, be it hasab or nasab. And then the Imam says, if you think that if you let go of this one and then this one will come in and this one will finish and something else will come instead, he says, you're quite mistaken. This is not going to happen. There's nothing that can replace your relatives. He says, whoever is kind and lean towards his relatives, he said, therefore be kind to them because this will increase the mawadda between you and them. Thank you for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Driving past, walking fast to the field of dreams. Hear the children's screams.
There was The Keys of Life by Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
Every corner represents a different image in my mind. A momentary emotion, space spent in time.
Our
Her voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.